This is Chris Evans with a Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
You're not too bad, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. I hear you're back in the office today.
Yeah, I was. Very, very quiet. I must have been about one of four or five people in our area, but there's more cleaners and catering staff than actual employees.
Yeah. Oh, well, never mind. I mean, at least you managed to get in, which is good, I suppose.
It was nice. Yeah.
That was good. Right, so this week we have Steve Ingerhut from PlyOps. Did I get that right, Steve?
You got it right. Great to be here.
Okay. Thanks. Excellent. Why don't you just introduce yourself, and you can, as part of that, tell us where the company name comes from, because that would be quite useful, and that would help me perhaps remember how to pronounce it.
Absolutely. So I'm the president and chief business officer for PlyOps. We're an Israeli-based company, but I'm based in California. And the history of the name, right, is plyo is a Greek word for many. And IOPS, of course, is a term that we're very familiar with in the storage industry. So bring those together and gives you an idea of what we're focused on, which is very high performance.
Excellent. Right. So our topic for today, we've seen a lot of discussion in the press over the last few weeks and months, especially with FMS coming up. We haven't really sort of mentioned that as part of our list here, but obviously we know that's coming up again soon. But we've seen a lot of talk about the use of what you might call add-in cards, offload cards, acceleration cards. Smart NICs is probably the overarching term that people are using. And we've talked about that, Martin, in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And in your instance, Steve, you are doing something that is an acceleration card, but something slightly different. So we're going to talk through what it is you're doing in this part of the market and what the sort of difference is between your technology, perhaps, and some of the other implementations we're seeing in the market. So I think it'd be really useful from your perspective to just sort of set the scene as to why you think there's a need for this sort of technology and explain, you know, why you came about creating something like this.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of innovation in the space, and for good reason. There's some tectonic plates smashing into each other in the industry, and so there's a lot of focus on solving that. And at first, we've heard it for so many years about the amazing data growth, right? The zettabytes of data that's going to be created and stored. And we also see a increasing percentage of that data being stored on flash for all the reasons, right? Everyone loves the performance, the reliability, et cetera. So you have, and then of course you have new technologies, the storage class memory with Optane being the one getting the most attention these days. And so you have a tremendous amount of data able to be accessed very, very fast on very fast media that's getting faster. And all of that is being run through a processor, which is not improving on the same rate as those other two. And that's basically Moore's law is flattening out. And so instead of doubling performance and lowering cost every 2 years, that is now on a 20-year cycle. So it's really a big challenge. And you mentioned SmartNICs, and some people call them DPUs, the data processing units. And we actually see those technologies as very complementary and tackling different parts of the problem, but we can talk more about that as we go through it.
Absolutely. I'd just like to ask Martin a question here. Now, I know, Steve, in your deck that you use, you have a graph which shows the curve and the improvement in performance of processors and the curve in improvement of NVMe, and very much the two diverge, and there's a gap there between the two, and that's what I think you're trying to fix, that the gap between the two. But I just wanted to sort of raise this with Martin, because Martin, remember how long we went on and talked about the fact that we were seeing an increase in CPU and we were seeing a gap between the speed of the hard drive and the speed of flash. And now we're in a position where we're sort of saying that flash is outdoing the CPU, because we're not really seeing the linear improvement in performance of the CPU. We're seeing it more parallelized, if you like, out into multiple cores. But it's ironic that the storage is now potentially being the piece of the infrastructure that's growing, whereas the CPU is now potentially the bottleneck.
But there have been a number of papers written about this over the past 5 years. There's a couple of papers which I've read from Google where they talk about this. They talk about CPUs rapidly becoming a bottleneck. What can we do to offload some of the load from CPU? So obviously you talked about DPUs. We've got the growth of the GPU. So it seems to be, we seem to be in the era of the offload processor, whatever. Almost feels like the CPU is becoming irrelevant.
Yeah, but that might be a slight exaggeration, yeah. Steve, perhaps.
Yeah, I know it is.
Well, and I would say it's that the it's it's a really good point, right? So hard drives, we lived with them for a long time, and even just a few years ago, you know, there were SSDs around, but they weren't nearly as common as they are today. And you take a hard drive, which on a good day with the wind at its back could maybe do 200 IOPS, and now you take, if you have an NVMe SSD that does 200,000 IOPS, you would say that's a poor performer, right? So now we're into the 400,000, 500,000, 800,000 IOPS, so many, many times faster. And so the work that was done to prepare data, you know, to optimally place it to disk, now, you know, now multiply that by 1,000, and of course the processor is nowhere near increasing that fast. So yeah, it really is, you know, just a big change in the server architecture, and we need to think about the CPU, by the way, is still going to be around forever. There are things that only the CPU can do in terms of application logic, and you want that to be dynamic, but there are these functions of take my variable data from my application and put it as efficiently as possible on disk. Those are pretty fundamental building blocks that really don't change depending on your application.
Okay. So what we've seen so far really is, I guess, an offload of three things really: network, storage, and potentially security, depending on how you class the security model. But obviously, in general, people are focused very much on network and storage. We've seen things like Nitro, we've seen Bluefield SmartNICs that are being used in Project Monterey and potentially Pensando. That initially seems to be the focus, but obviously that's just a small subset of what you could do. And clearly within your architecture, you've taken a slightly different approach in the sense that you're not accelerating I/O outside of the box for external connectivity like those devices potentially are. But you're solving the problem for performance within the server, I think, Steve. Would that be a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, that's very well said, Chris. And the DPUs are focused on the movement of data between the server nodes, and that of course is critical. But the challenge I talked about, right, that you have applications, they're giving you their data, and you need to compress that and pack it as efficiently as possible and make sure it survives drive failures and system failures. That's a very complex operation, and it can take, what we hear from customers is that function alone can take up to half the cores in a box. So you're talking about 20 or 30 or 40 Xeon, you know, very heavy Xeon cores, and none of the SmartNICs or DPUs are delivering anything near that performance capability. So they're very good at what they do, which is about the movement of data. And where PLIOPS is focused is that last step of where does that data finally reside and make sure it's done as efficiently as possible. And so we've actually done work with the SmartNIC vendors, so with NVIDIA and their Bluefield processor, we've done a demonstration where we work together. And in fact, there's no x86 processor present, and we can deliver a very high performance storage node, and we lighten the CPU load so much that it fits well into the envelope of the SmartNIC.
Okay, we'll come on to the specific of the implementation in a second. I'd just like to mention something to Martin, and that's the idea of mass coprocessors, or whatever else we used to call them in the mainframe days, Martin. You know, that ability to offload what are seen as complex functions that might not have existed within the core of the main operating system, but sit somewhere else.
Oh, these are vector processors and got
yes.
Them.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that seems to be an area where we perhaps could go back to based on what Steve's just said, I think.
Yeah, I think we are. I think that's what we're seeing in general. I think we're seeing more and more of this.
Mm. So, Steve, why don't you dive a bit deeper and explain what your technology is, how it fits in and what it does. And it'll be good, I think, to cover perhaps form factor and how it fits into the layers of, because we haven't got any visuals, we're not doing any sort of presentation, so we're going to have to sort of make it up in our own minds, but just that layering system between what you're actually implementing and how that fits into, say, an application.
From a physical perspective, and I'm using my hands, so you know, no one will know what I'm actually showing you, but it's pretty simple. It's a low profile PCIe card, plugs into a server. There's really no other connectivity required, and so fits into any standard server, and we're not directly connecting to the storage itself. So it really can be any flash. It can be locally attached, It can be even network attached via iSCSI or NVMe over whatever fabric or TCP. So we really put a high premium on flexibility. And so, but what you do is you redirect your IOs to, instead of going straight to that disk, it goes to our storage processor. And we present in two ways. The one that we're focused on really for the early is block interface. That means it looks like a block device and requires no application changes whatsoever. Underneath the hood, though, is a hardware-based, extremely efficient and high-performance key-value store. And that is that fundamental software piece that I mentioned, that's something like RocksDB is very popular. It's doing all of those functions, compressing, packing, merging, garbage collection, that is extremely resource-intensive and inefficient, but we do that in a very efficient way. So we also offer a native path with KV. So if you're using, for example, RocksDB or really any number of similar functions, you can tweak your software. So instead of talking to the RocksDB API, you're talking to the PlyOps KV API, looks exactly the same, and you're bypassing all of those layers and getting direct access to it. So two ways, both very focused on using the existing protocols, either block or KV. And one requires no changes whatsoever. One requires a little bit of adjustments to the application. And so, and actually both can operate simultaneously as well. So I had a mouthful there. So hopefully that makes sense to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to try and understand that in a bit more detail. So we know key value stores, what they're doing. We've talked about key value stores before, and we can link to some of the other podcast recordings we've done where we've talked about key value stores. But I guess what is not clear for what you just said there, which would be good to dig down a little bit deeper on, is the interface between an application. So, and obviously you're talking at this stage, database applications, and how they're writing their data. Now, we know that databases have storage engines that sit between the physical storage and the application logic, if you like, or the database logic, and they manage the process of storing the data efficiently on disk to allow the database to work efficiently. Are you hooked into that layer, into the storage engine of a database?
We can be, and so that is really the optimal path. So that involves the direct, like I said, it's a little bit of work in the software level, and we've done this for Redis as an example, and it was a very short effort, but we link our KV API directly into Redis, and you can get extremely high performance, and in that case, we actually deliver DRAM-like performance using standard flash. But then what we discovered is that we can get many of the benefits for a broad set of applications with the block interface. And so what we do is we take blocks and if you think about the LBA as the key and the 4K payload as the value, then that's just the key value pair. And we take it in, compress it, and then everything else after that is the same, whether it comes in through the block interface or KV. And so that allows us to basically take advantage of that hardware-based storage engine, as you call it, for performance, for space reductions, and several other benefits.
Okay, so are you acting then as the replacement for somebody's existing storage in their server, or are you acting as like a conduit and doing that compression and that optimization before you write it back out to the storage in the server?
Right, so we're not selling flash, right? This is you keep buying whoever you like, whoever your vendor or vendors are for your preferred method. And so yeah, we really are. It's a step that we fit in right in between your current application and your current SSD. So minimally, no disruption to your supply chains and everything just works the way it was, but much better.
Okay. So Martin, I mean, my first thought with all of these sort of things, I don't know whether you think the same, is that, how on earth do you manage things like resiliency and redundancy? And what happens if you pull the card out and you want to take it out of the way? Those are the sort of the challenges we see with any of these sort of technologies, I think.
It's a normal thing, isn't it? It's about reliability, availability, consistency, but having that and serviceability. With a single card, we always worry about having single cards, don't we, Chris? So we'd want to see two in any server. And also how you'd manage server redundancy. failover modes, scale out as opposed to scale up. The architectural challenges that seem to leap out a bit.
Like I said, we've built in for maximum flexibility, and so there are a number of ways that the industry is solving that, and everyone has their preferred method that they've already worked out. And what we're saying is keep doing those things exactly as you're doing them today. And what we're providing is that much more efficient, and we can talk about kind of what those values are, but you get higher performance, you get much less physical disk consumed from your data, you get better endurance, and you get basically protection from a drive failure like RAID 5 with no performance degradation. So if you really think of it as we're accelerating somewhere, no matter where your data is, somewhere it's talking to local disks, right? It can be on your server, it can be networked, but eventually it's a processor writing to disks. That's where we will be, and we will make that experience better. And then how you handle HA, that's the thing. If we tried to come up with a solution there, then someone says, well, we do it a little bit differently. Great. Right now we just say, do it exactly the way you're doing, and we will fit in and just make that whole operation more efficient.
So would it be fair to think of your technology sitting as an extra slightly, just on the outside, a slight wrapper around the disk layer, so that everything else that the application does above that, in terms of redundancy and all those sort of other features, still carry on as before, but you're just adding a sort of a very thin layer around the physical media to improve the performance?
Absolutely. Right. And we've done it in a way that's virtual, meaning we aren't actually physically taking over the drive. So your whole, you know, the validation that goes into making sure that's robust, the error management, all of that stays the same. And then in a way, yes, we're a hardware product, but the way we integrate, it's more like a software layer, and everything else can stay the same.
So can we touch again just on the benefits of using this? Because clearly, there's a cost of putting a card into a server. There's an overhead to that. So there's got to be some benefit from it. And I'd be interested to understand how you quantify those benefits, what you think they are to the end user, and just how that then is explained in terms of, you know, how it fits in with different application types, perhaps.
Sure. So maybe it'll help to see kind of today how people are dealing with these situations. You know, we talked about that, okay, the system performance is imbalanced, right? You have very fast media going through a relatively slow processor. The software has to take shortcuts to keep up. And what that ends up doing is amplifying the data that gets written to the media, and that has some impacts. And then, of course, trying to deliver a reliable solution, people are doing things like RAID 1 or RAID 10, which is very expensive, or they're foregoing RAID, local RAID whatsoever, and they're counting on the application and network rebuilds to maintain that reliability. And so you see, when you add all that up, you see people deploying many times much more flash than they need for their data, and also spending a lot of money on processors that are really not serving their application needs, but serving all of this data management needs. So that's sort of the problem statement. And then how we're solving that is we're, because of this very efficient engine that we've built, number one, we're performing the inline transparent compression, fully offloaded, fully accelerated, that you would expect in a high-end all-flash array, but we're performing that in a building block type of device. And so that means you can, you know, depending on the compressibility of the workload, but we're seeing 3 to 4x pretty typical for pretty much any data stored to flash. And so right there, you're getting a 75% reduction in your flash costs. So that's a big one. The second is that to go along with that density, we're actually improving the performance of your application. So if you think about it in terms of instances, if today you're trying to run your database, whether it's SQL or NoSQL, you're consuming a certain amount of processor and memory resources. Because we are reducing the latency and the efficiency of that application, we're seeing that you can get 3 or 5, or some cases even 10 times the number of instances on a given processor memory setup than if you weren't using PlyOps. So that's a big one just in terms of density, get more from your server, and then Another big one is the drive fail protection. So no one thinks about using RAID 5 with SSDs because of the terrible performance that you get day to day. And then if you go into degraded and rebuild mode, it's unacceptable. And so our data structure, the way we write to disk, it makes it very easy for us to survive a drive failure rebuild. And it's on the order of, you know, a few percentage points difference that you'll see in performance. So almost a negligible difference in performance during any of those failure states. And so anyway, you add all that up and you can say you're going to get a much denser solution, much more reliable, eliminate the RAID 10 overhead, and you know, get a much more dense and efficient solution.
Yeah. I think, Martin, we've seen this sort of concept a number of times. So we've seen, for example, when we went to NVMe, and I did a blog post on this a couple of years ago, but when we went to NVMe, we saw significant improvement in the application because the wait time, the latency of the application having to sit and wait for the I/O to come back was vastly reduced, so the CPU was a lot more efficiently utilized. And it seems to be that there are a lot of attempts to try and improve some of those real failures, or rather, not failures particularly, but those shortcomings in the way that we've done I/O, whether it's across the network or across storage, I think.
Yeah, well, because it saves you money.
Mm.
It doesn't save you. It may save you money on hardware, but where it's really going to save you money, if you can make better use of your cores, you can save money on your licensing costs. So you're paying less to Oracle or Microsoft, but that's where the big savings for big users are.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to understand how much that actually translates to, because, I mean, obviously we know running databases is expensive, and it's more likely to only be the proprietary ones where you're paying by call that savings is going to come. But even so, I guess if you are being efficient about it and you are trying to up the density, this is a great way of fixing a problem with a server that doesn't require you to build something even more gigantic than the one you had previously. You know, you could put a card like this into the system and immediately get a performance boost that might delay an upgrade or might delay a license change or something like that.
Everybody's moving away from socket licensing, so everybody's going to core licensing. So you basically want to get as efficient as possible as you can with how you use those cores. And the other thing is, it could give you a midlife kicker as well. One of the things we're seeing in the enterprise space, it's actually very hard to right size a server now, but there are too many cores. So if something like this may actually allow us to reduce the number of cores, we may be looking at lower end processors if we can, which are more power efficient, obviously yet again more license efficient. So maybe technology like this can shift a balance, because we've just been throwing core after core after core at these problems.
Yeah, we've thought about that in terms of, is exactly right. Most customers we're talking about, they're saying, you know, we don't want to change that. Let's just get more out of what we're buying. But we've absolutely, you know, you can get platinum performance at silver or bronze pricing. So to buy a low-end processor with our device, and then you get a much more balanced system. But like I said, most of the, you know, if you're thinking about your business is based on the servers and the infrastructure you provide, then people are looking for scalability and efficiency, and they're looking for all the headroom they can get. But absolutely, that's a great way to take advantage of it, and, you know, keep your per node density the same, but deliver that same performance at a lower cost.
So in terms of the technology you've developed so far, Steve, you sort of talk about the idea of this being the first of a number of different scenarios that you might be able to go to. So is the architecture based on a design in such a way that you could come up with new areas in which you could adapt the technology to work? And if so, are you in a position to sort of talk about what any of those might be?
Absolutely. We there's a lot of runway with what we have, right? Because once you say it works with block and flash, okay, that's a pretty big universe. And we see, you know, and if you look at the databases, SQL, NoSQL, and some of the analytics, then that covers pretty much most of how Flash is used today. But then there, especially once you get to the KV interface, then there's a really a lot of interesting innovations. And one of them is around analytics. And so a simple example that I think of is, you know, if a Facebook like is, you know, if you, I don't know exactly what it is, but you could imagine it's a key value store, which has your user ID, a timestamp, and then the object ID of the thing you liked. Okay. And so we could be saving billions of those And if you wanted to say, you know, show me Chris's last 10 Facebook likes, that is a command that we could receive. And we would have the full context of that data. So we would say, okay, it's a timestamp, it's a sorting. We could deliver that, you know, in a single step to the application. If we were doing that with block, then we would have to somehow reconstruct the data, what's in that block, what are the other relevant blocks. It would take a lot more overhead. So really building on that native KV core allows for a lot of interesting potential, particularly around the analytics space.
Okay. So whereabouts are you in terms of deployment and shipping of the product? And I think the reason I asked that question, sorry to just almost, you almost were going to answer there, and I just wanted to finish off what I was going to say. The reason I'm asking you that specifically is just to try and understand what successes you've seen with customers so far, or what savings you've seen, and if there's any sort of examples you can give related to that, because I'm guessing you're not shipping yet, or you're very close to GA.
Correct. Yeah, we've kind of finished our beta phase, and now we're in a line of sight to start, you know, broad pilot deployments later this year. So that's just in a couple of months. But we have gone through rigorous testing with, you know, we're north of 15 companies now, all name brand large companies that you would recognize, both, you know, from the cloud space as well as some of the key partners in the ecosystem have evaluated it and looked at a couple different, or, you know, many different use cases. And some of the ones that are most interesting are around that, where either they have a certain application and they've given up on really any type of local drive failure protection. So one company in particular is using RAID 0 across all of their data center, and they count on the application layer resilience, so of software failover, but that has a negative service level impact. Okay, the data survives, et cetera, but the customers experience a, you know, significant outage, and that's bad for their service levels. And so by enabling the, you know, you can survive. I hesitate to use RAID 5 because of all the negative connotations people have with it, but you know, the ability to survive a drive failure with really minimal performance degradation, that has opened up a whole new realm. So they can deliver a much better service level for their customers, and then also they're getting more density. So they can, and the way they're thinking about it is more for scalability and headroom in the future, not necessarily let's buy fewer servers. And there are others where we've seen they're actually deploying a very little amount of flash for pretty high-end processors. So it's a storage skinny node, and it's not very efficient. And so through our evaluations, we've identified that they can greatly increase the density because we're removing that processor bottleneck for their database applications. And so it's been some variation on those themes at most customers. And so, yeah, we're definitely ramping up for broad pilots, and we'll be announcing our availability in the early part of next year.
Okay, brilliant. Martin, I really would like to sort of go back to this discussion we have quite frequently, this whole idea of hardware becoming very much more relevant again. And obviously the SmartNIC movement has started kicking it off. We're going to see computational storage coming back and talking about, you know, that as an option, I guess, after Flash Memory Summit. It is amazing how we go through that pendulum swing of hardware fixing the challenges of software when it's not delivering what it should do. And then software gets a gain and hardware takes the back seat, and then it swings around again. And we definitely appear to be in a bit of a hardware at the forefront in that pendulum swing at the moment.
Yeah, I think Mark Anderson once said the problem with hardware is hard. And I think that's why we see a new deployment of hardware come along, and we see software which starts to, but the actual development time for the next generation of hardware is much longer. So what we see is we'll see software comes along, takes advantage of it, keeps pushing it, and then we'll see new hardware platforms coming up. And it's interesting the way at the moment we just seem to be seeing a theme of them at the moment. Offload engines of all types seem to be coming to the fore at the moment.
It is fascinating because it then creates, I think, a bit more of a confusion, or at least a bit more of a challenge for application and infrastructure architects to then look at and think, how do they design their infrastructure? Because we seem to get to a point say, 3 or 4 years ago, where perhaps when we were talking about software-defined data center, everything would be very generic, and we just stick in a standard server, memory, we connect it to some storage, it'd have some networking, and as long as there was enough of each, we could mix and match that application server and make and do whatever we wanted with it, and we could just put them in vanilla, in racks and racks and racks. It just seems now we're in this situation where the hardware is becoming much more important to the application, and features, you know, technologies like this are actually becoming critical to delivering applications the most efficient way.
Yeah, but it will still be software defined, Chris, because it will still be all programmatic, automatable, using REST APIs to decide where you want to put your workloads, how you want to configure it. So yeah, it still will all be software defined. So the software defined data center is almost the layer on top of your hardware infrastructure below now.
And does that, Steve, does that mean, for instance, if you're in a composable infrastructure environment, a customer could, if they had that ability, because you're plugged onto the PCI bus, they could just introduce your technology into their server if their hardware's got that capability? Can you envisage it being that simple for people to implement if they wanted to?
That's really been our focus, is to make it like that, because the more changes you require, or the more you say this is a specialized device that only works in these certain workloads, then it is going to be challenging to deploy that at scale. And we certainly see that with, like, the AI. You see clusters of GPUs or now, you know, certain AI processors that are specialized for training. But then you'll also see that customers will use spare cycles across their data center to supplement that, right, and provide more training. So we absolutely think that flexibility is key, and that's been a mantra for us. So we do expect that our device will be deployed wherever there is flash in the data center, and that we will make those applications significantly better. And if 1 minute it's running one application, the next it's running another, or actually both of them simultaneously, then, you know, no changes are required to our device. It, like I said, just it works just like any other, you know, block storage in your system. So absolutely agree with you on the operational requirements there, and that the world will still be software defined. It's just there's certain repetitive mechanical tasks that are common enough that we've identified them and can say, let's move this into hardware, let's provide the same abstraction to software and make the whole infrastructure more efficient.
Excellent. Okay, so if people would like to go and find out a little bit more and look at your technology in a bit more detail, where would you like to point them to?
Sure, definitely pliops.com, PLIOPS, and a really interesting tool there is the Redis TCO calculator for, you know, what's an in-memory database today. Now you can use low-cost flash. You can put in your inputs in terms of data size and what you're paying for flash and memory, and it will show you the savings. So that'd be a great place to start.
Fantastic. Steve, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. And come back and tell us what you're up to when it goes GA. We can learn a bit more out about it, or when you've got the next version. But for now, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Chris and Martin, for the opportunity. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.